Good morning from the Financial Times. Today is Wednesday, April 10th, and this is your FT News Briefing. AI is getting closer to superhuman learning, and Australia wants to start making its goods at home again. Plus, Ecuador's new president gambled big by storming the Mexican embassy.
It's a massive deal. It's practically unprecedented at a state level.
I'm Sonia Hudson, and here's the news you need to start your day. OpenAI and Meta are getting close to releasing new artificial intelligence models that are capable of reasoning. This is a big step towards creating AI that has superhuman abilities. Meta will launch its new tool called Llama 3 in the next few weeks, and OpenAI says its ChatGPT 5 is coming soon. In just one example, Meta says it plans to integrate it into smart glasses, the idea being that you could look at a broken coffee machine and the glasses would tell you how to fix it. Police in Ecuador stormed their way into the Mexican embassy late last Friday night. They were after the country's former vice president, Jorge Glass. Mexico had granted him asylum after he was charged with corruption. The country has since cut diplomatic ties with Ecuador. The episode made people sit up and pay attention to Ecuador's new president, Daniel Noboa. Here to talk to me about the situation is the FT's Joe Daniels. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Sonia.
So, Joe, bring us up to speed here. Who exactly is Jorge Glass, and how big of a deal was this raid?
Jorge Glass is an Ecuadorian politician. He served as vice president of Ecuador from 2013 to 2017 during the government of the leftist authoritarian, really, Rafael Correa, who is a very influential figure in Ecuadorian politics. Jorge Glass was accused, as have many people from Correa's political movement, of involvement in drug trafficking, but his sentences relate to corruption. And it's a massive deal to raid the embassy of a foreign country. It's practically unprecedented at a state level. It's something that could set a very dangerous precedent, and that's very concerning for the stability of diplomatic relations in the region.
And what about Ecuador's president, Daniel Noboa? What should we know about him?
Well, the thing about Noboa is we don't actually know that much about him as a person. He is the son of one of Ecuador's richest men. He is educated abroad, but he was pretty much a political neophyte when he entered the race in the snap election last year. He surged to popularity during the campaign, and he has benefited politically from being an outsider in a country that was really kind of yearning for one.
And so why do you think that he would take such a big risk like this?
Well, the political situation in Ecuador is very much tied to the security situation inside Ecuador. In the last sort of 5 years or so, its murder rate has exploded. There's been gang and cartel violence dominating swathes of the country, prison riots, prison breakouts. And then in January, we saw gangs launch a kind of series of attacks, including the takeover of a TV station live on air. In response to all of that, Daniel Noboa has launched a crackdown. He declared a state of emergency that lasted for 90 days, that empowered the military to take control of the prisons and to basically police crime.
Is this raid a gamble then by Noboa to show that he's really serious about tackling corruption and tackling crime?
Exactly. That's the logic, the only logic that many people can see in his decision to raid the Mexican embassy and arrest Glass. It's a domestic political gamble to shore up his support. I mean, he was elected in a snap election last year. And so he is actually only serving out the term of his predecessor. There's scheduled regular elections in February 2025. So in less than a year, the Ecuadorians will go to the polls to vote on a president. He's widely expected to run. There's also another dynamic at play, which is in order to cement his policies, he has called a referendum on the 21st of April. So some people think that he's also attempting to kind of buoy support for the questions on his referendum, which largely relate to security measures that would make those into a kind of more permanent law.
So, Joe, just zooming out here a little bit, we've been hearing a lot about drug trafficking and violence in this region for a while now. And we've also been hearing about the increasingly harsh tactics to contain it. Can you put this raid in Ecuador into context for us?
What it shows is that countries are becoming essentially more and more bold in what they're willing to do in the name of fighting drug trafficking. This shows that governments like that of Ecuador are really willing to do new things, and apparently with the public's backing, in order to fight narco trafficking.
Joe Daniels is the FT's Andean correspondent. Thanks, Joe.
Thank you.
Big investors are selling U.S. treasuries and buying more European government bonds. They're betting that the European Central Bank will cut interest rates faster than the Federal Reserve will. That's because Europe has cooler inflation and a weaker economy than the U.S. Investors also think the ECB is likely to make more cuts. Markets are currently pricing in 3 or 4 rate cuts in the Eurozone by the end of the year, compared with only 2 or 3 for the Fed. Australia has outsourced a lot of its manufacturing for decades, but supply chain shocks and geopolitical tensions over the past few years have made the country think twice about that. Now the government wants to revitalize the industry to make its economy more resilient. I'm joined by Nick Fildes, the FT's Australia and Pacific correspondent, to discuss. Hi, Nick.
G'day. How are you doing?
Doing well, thanks. So can you tell us a little bit more about why Australia decided to make this pivot?
I think 2 factors. One is the COVID situation. Obviously, during the pandemic, a lot of focus was given to the fact that Australia doesn't manufacture a lot, so things like vaccines. Suddenly, this became a big focal point for how vulnerable we are when supply chains are disrupted. And the second thing, I guess, is the well-publicized 2020 trade dispute with China, where some of our most high-profile industries like wine, cotton, timber became subject to various forms of sanctions and tariffs. We wrote it out fairly well, as it turns out. We found other export markets for our goods, but the knock-on effect was that it did highlight that Australia is very dependent on countries like China for a lot of our imports.
All right, well, what's the plan to fix that?
The plan is to reduce Australia's dependence, economic dependence, on our very large and very influential mining industry. So the Labor government has established an Australian dollar $15 billion fund called the National Reconstruction Fund. And what that's looking to do is to transform small, innovative companies in various sectors into potentially globally significant businesses that can manufactured important goods within Australia to reduce our dependence on the rest of the world. Very much we're looking at things like renewable energy, medicines, defence, and also those sectors that do dominate our economy, agriculture and mining. You know, there are technological developments around there, companies that are building up around there that could, with support, become, you know, interesting global players as well. So the idea is to target at those sort of sectors where Australia can make a mark, rather than just trying to aim for everything and hope that it works.
And how have companies responded to this plan? I mean, does it seem like it's going to work?
Broadly, there is positive reaction to this, yes. We will see how it plays out. This is all relatively new. I think there is a recognition that Australia is a high-cost place to do something like manufacturing. We have high wages, high energy costs, so you need to be able to provide a subsidy or a loan that would enable you to compete with lower costs. So similar to the IRA, right? America's also a high-cost economy. The Inflation Reduction Act there has been used for companies to tap into to say, okay, we will, set up a manufacturing facility here, which we might not have done under our own steam due to cost pressures, but with this secured loan or with this subsidy, we're able to do it.
Nick Fields covers Australia for the FT. Thanks, Nick.
No problem. Thank you very much.
Before we go, the FT Weekend Festival is coming to Washington, D.C. on May 4th. The event will include conversations with political leaders like former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan. You can find out how to register by clicking the link in our show notes. And podcast listeners get 10% off by using the code WEEKENDPODCAST. This has been your daily FT News Briefing. Make sure you check back tomorrow for the latest business news.